At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. The rain just won't go away. Up to 8 inches of rain has fallen over the last 3 days in parts of North Texas, and more is on the way. Officially, Dallas-Fort Worth has seen more than 5 inches of rain so far in February, making this the sixth wettest February on record. That's according to the National Weather Service. A flood watch remains in effect through tomorrow morning for much of North Texas. There's also a chance for severe weather tomorrow across DFW. The main threat is hail. East of the metro, though, there's a chance for damaging winds and tornadoes. That includes parts of Hunt, Kaufman, and Navarro counties. Now to our week-long Texas Decides project. We've been partnering with public radio stations across the state and answering your questions about the March 6th primary elections. Tonight's subject, how political district maps are drawn. The Supreme Court will decide 3 cases on partisan gerrymandering, including one from Texas. At issue, is drawing congressional districts to favor one political party over another unconstitutional? A listener asked us, what can citizens do about gerrymandering? Andrew Schneider with Houston Public Media gets some answers.
Gerrymandering itself is almost as old as the Republic, but for the first 200 years, it was more art than science. Drawing districts involved a lot of guesswork about where a party's supporters live. Guess wrong, and you spread your support too thin. A small swing of the vote could sweep you out of power. But technology has made it more accurate.
The computer modeling has gotten so much better with respect to the ability to be able to draw these districts so precisely that they become safe seats.
Charles Rocky Rhodes, a constitutional law professor at South Texas College of Law Houston, says that's a major reason the Supreme Court is finally taking up the question.
Even in a gerrymandered district, in order for the courts to be able to review whether perhaps the gerrymander is somehow unconstitutional, it helps to see what has been the impact of the gerrymander on individual voting rights.
For that, let's look to North Carolina. In 2016, just over half of the voters there chose Republicans. But North Carolina ended up electing 10 Republican congressmen and just 3 Democrats. Still, even if the justices impose limits on gerrymandering, that may not make new districts much more competitive. Elizabeth Seamus studies electoral behavior at the University of Houston.
There was a great map recently that showed Texas divided by counties and partisan competition within counties. And it's really not competitive. Counties tend to be either red or blue. I mean, they're not subject to the same kind of manipulation that our House districts are.
If your party happens to be in the minority, there's a natural tendency to look at political maps and get discouraged. Cal Gilson, a political scientist at Southern Methodist University, says that's a mistake. He says the first thing citizens can do to address the problem of gerrymandering is to show up to vote.
Elections are contests of strength between the two major political parties. So if you're a Democrat in a Republican district, you've got to get out there and work to keep your Democratic ticket competitive. If you're a Republican in a Democratic urban district, for example, you've got to show the flag as well and get out there.
The second thing citizens can do is run for office. Gerrymandering may make it tougher for one party to win a seat in Congress, but the odds drop to zero if the party doesn't put someone on the ballot. Elizabeth Seamus of the University of Houston says that happens all too often.
In Texas, we see a lot of just non-competitive races, non-competitive in the sense that they don't have a viable challenger to the opposition. Candidates are the ones ultimately who can inspire people to go out and give them that glimmer of hope.
That theory will get a test this fall. Of the state's 36 congressional districts, 32 will have candidates from both major political parties. In Houston, I'm Andrew Schneider.
Early voting wraps up a week from today. Election day is March 6th. We have a voter's guide at keranews.org. Renowned painter Ellsworth Kelly died almost 3 years ago, and a work he planned for more than 30 years is only now complete. It's a chapel building called Austin, and it just opened at the Blanton Art Museum in Austin. Today in State of the Arts, Rainey Knudsen, editor of online arts magazine Glass Tire, tells KERA's Ann Bothwell why the art world is paying attention.
Rainey Knudsen, welcome to KERA.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You were in Austin recently for the opening festivities of this work. Tell us what it looks like.
Well, the colloquial name apparently on campus amongst the students is the igloo. It's a Romanesque cross-shaped building that has stained glass windows on three of the walls. And I will say it is beautifully constructed, as well it should have been, for $23 million. So the edges of the exterior are crisp. Those curves are perfect. It is incongruous on campus because it's next to some of these really ugly concrete buildings on the UT campus, which are all sort of which need a good power washing, frankly. And then you have this little sort of jewel box, pristine, brand new, right next to them. So
what's it like when you're inside of it?
I was there on a sunny day, and so the light comes in through these rainbow-colored stained glass windows. It's warm and lovely, and it feels like going to church.
Ellsworth Kelly first made plans for this building decades ago.
Yeah, in 84. And so this guy, Douglas Kramer, who was the producer of The Love Boat and Dynasty, and if you think about it, in 84, like, that was the heyday of those
sure
wonderful television shows that I grew up with. He commissioned Kelly to do a piece. I think he was a big collector of Kelly's and a big admirer of his work. And so Kelly designed this for his property near Santa Barbara, I think with the idea that in the Southern California light, it would be this light-filled, sort of beautiful space.
So that didn't get built.
Right.
How did it wind up in Texas?
It came to Texas because a dealer in Houston named Hiram Butler discovered the piece through his friendship with Ellsworth Kelly and championed it and actually initially brought it to Rice University in Houston, and Rice passed on it. And so then it went to UT Austin, and they were excited to do it, and they raised the money to do it.
How does this compare with the Rothko Chapel in Houston?
Well, and I've written about the Rothko Chapel in the past, and I'm not a fan of it. I called it the last gasp of a suicidal imagination because it's very, very dark. I think the Rothko Chapel is about death and about a very sort of specific idea of death being this black, calm notion of infinitude or something. And so I kind of think that's what it's trying to get at. It does have an emotional impact, a visceral emotional impact. And perhaps that's why I've never been a big fan of it, because I think it's a gloomy, visceral emotional impact. The Ellsworth Kelly Chapel just feels like going into a pretty church. What's interesting about it is Ellsworth Kelly was atheist. He was not a religious person. In fact, he did not want this chapel to go to a Catholic university at one point because they insisted on that it would be consecrated if they did. And so I think he wanted it to be non-denominational and did not want it to be Christian. And yet it is very much drawing explicitly on this Christian tradition, this Christian architectural tradition.
The New York Times is calling this Kelly's masterpiece. Mm. What do you think?
Well, it's certainly Kelly's big expensive building compared to other things. When you start to understand what his great project was, which was looking at the world and distilling the forms and colors of the world into these shapes that maybe was the way a shadow fell on a door frame or in a corner or something, and you start to, oh, that's what he was looking at. That's what he was thinking about. There's something very distilled and beautiful about his work. And to me, the shaped canvases and his works on paper, which I admire very much, are to me his very great legacy. And I think the chapel is fine and very fancy. And I will say, I saw it both during the daytime and at night. And when I walked out of the chapel at night and saw that view straight down Congress Avenue to the Texas State Capitol, all lit up, beautiful. I love the Texas State Capitol. There was a, dare I say, a certain magic in that. And I would say even there's an architectural sort of conversation going on between those two buildings, both of which draw upon incredibly classical ideas or you know, forms of architecture.
Rainey Knutson, thank you so much for coming by.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
To see images of Ellsworth Kelly's chapel, visit artinseek.org. And again, a flood watch is in effect for most of the listening area until tomorrow afternoon. Tonight, you can expect showers and storms with a low around 50. Tomorrow, storms with possible heavy rain and a high near 67. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.